Hello, mech fans around the world, and those that aren't fans yet, and welcome to Mobile Suit Fandom, the podcast where your two largely inept but prone to love co-hosts Fuzzy, that'd be me, and Chris watch, summarize, critique, and make fun of the entirety of the Gundam franchise from beginning to end. This is episode 34, and we'll be talking about episode 34 of Mobile Suit Gundam 0079, A Fateful Encounter, in which we are much more prone to a deep hatred this time around. Also, shit gets trippy. Moe agare, and take it away. It's not. I have a neck beard of a pubescent child. Welcome to Mobile Suit Fandom. I am your exasperated friend Fuzzy.
I'm your depressed friend Chris.
It's gonna be a day. Let me tell you.
Well, the good news is we've got. There's a thing that happens this episode that will. There's at least one time in this episode where you'll
get livened up, pretty considerably. Yeah. there are definitely a couple of points for me, including that one.
Y'all fuck this episode.
I mean, in part, yes, fuck this. This episode's really weird.
It struggles for tone. Let's just
compare the tonality of this to Bambi on Ice. is giving it too much credit. It was wilder than those legs, those tiny spindly legs. I'm not gonna lie, for a while I thought I just started the episode too stoned, and so I stopped, went back, and did it again.
I got to the part where you messaged me at, where like, is there a weird echo here, or am I fucked up? And I was like, oh, okay, no, there's a weird echo here. He's not that fucked up.
Yeah. It's not just that, because everything else that happens to Amuro this episode is just really fucking weird. It's like David Lynch, the ghost of David Lynch, came out of Tomino's closet and was like, but hear me out.
This is a David Lynch episode, holy shit.
What's weird is the only David Lynch thing I've actually seen is Mulholland Drive.
See, I haven't seen that. I've seen the first season, our friend made me watch the first season of Twin Peaks, the original one, and it's... The beginning of this episode is just a Twin Peaks episode.
Yeah, it really is. It's such a... How do you talk about Twin Peaks? I don't listen to Twin Peaks recap podcasts, so I'm struggling to know where to, pierce this egg. This weird, non-Euclidean egg.
I have seen the Twin Peaks, and I'm not sure how to talk about it. So instead, let's talk about what we do know how to talk about.
Oh, no, I meant this episode, too. I meant I don't know how to talk about this.
Dude, because I was really hoping to just start backseat this one. Let you drive. I don't do that every...
I'll do my best, but... This is fucking weird. So
it's strap in, people.
It's okay. Quick, let's start as we normally do. Quick reminder: Amuro kills a lot of people, and he is a death machine piloting another bigger death machine.
Yeah, yo, dog. We heard you like death machines.
Mm-hmm.
So we put a death machine inside of a 20-year-old meme. Chris is ancient.
I don't. That's not Cribs, that's...
Chris.
Oh, Chris.
I'm Chris.
I was like, that's the wrong MTV show.
Yo, MTV raps.
So, they're not out of the woods yet, though.
Okay. No, they are. They're in space. They're in the space woods.
You know, I also just noticed most of this episode takes place in a rainy pine forest.
It does.
Fucking.
It's in East Texas.
It is just a Twin Peaks episode. So, We title card in to Bright and Mirai on the Bridge of White Base talking about the current situation. It's literally everything we already know. They're just reminding us.
Bright is grumpy because Amuro's not here.
Yes. And
he says, also, in the English dub, he sounds just fucking, where's Amuro? What the fuck? And she's like, he went out on a thing. He's like, is it important? She's like, well, I'm sure it is. Jeez, dude.
Yeah, he's not quite that angry in the Japanese. A little. Like, he's a little like, yo, where's our child? Where's one of the children we're in charge of?
Where's our child soldier? Our lead child soldier? Our star, our quarterback child soldier?
Quarterback child soldier. God.
Also, I thought that like he would be off on like, when she said he's away like on an away mission or something like that.
Yeah, she phrases it like an operation, and it is not.
No, he's going to see, spoiler, he's going to see his dad again.
Yeah.
Which apparently now his dad lives in the middle of BFE.
Yeah.
Because last episode he lived in the city, like a bus went by his house.
Yeah, so like I understand that we're in a weird colony that like borders on non-Euclidean, I guess, but Amuro drove through the fucking boonies to get there. That said, we're not even there yet within the episode, but yeah.
No.
It definitely teleported out in this junkyard, teleported into a pine woods. Because there were definitely no trees in the background last time, or like any indication. And yet here we are in a Twin Peaks. Do you think he just watched Twin? When did Twin Peaks come out?
It was the early 90s, wasn't it?
Well, then definitely. Yeah, the 90s. All right. So.
Maybe. Okay, hear me out. Maybe David Lynch is Tomino in disguise.
You see, I was going to go for the slightly more plausible but equally wild to believe David Lynch saw this episode of Gundam in Japanese and went, holy shit,
I can do that.
And just ran with it.
Okay, what if this, but everybody was fucking? By the way, like, in Twin Peaks, I needed a fucking murder board to track who was fucking who.
Really?
And who, like, because, like, the whole thing is this small town where just, I tell you what, if one person gets mono, that whole city's fucked. In, like, a week tops. Anyways, enough Twin Peaks. We cut to Amuro, right? And he's in his dope dune buggy.
Yeah, he's in the dune buggy, but he's getting rained on super hard.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a downpour.
Yeah.
His dune buggy does not have
a roof.
A roof or windshield.
So
or,
he is quite wet.
He grumbles about it.
Yeah. It's a real interesting internal monologue. It's not.
And for some reason he decides, like, he sees a house and he's like, oh cool, I'll just go crash at this house.
Yeah. He doesn't even like knock either. He just sees like an A-frame house and goes, I'm gonna stand under that awning. And not even had, what's funny is in a second he turns the corner and there's like a whole covered porch. But he saw the first bit of cover, a 1 foot wide awning over a back door, and said, that's where I live. That's my home right there.
That's where I belong.
Yeah, and so he throws his car into park and goes and stands under this tiny awning. And does not consider knocking on the door?
No, he just stands there looking at it awkwardly.
Until a crane flies by. Which is the real start of the real weirdness. So a crane is slowly flying by.
Like, in slow, weird slow motion.
Despite the fact that Amuro isn't in slow motion.
No.
But the crane is very slow.
Yeah. It's such a long, weird sequence.
It really is, but it's also our introduction to probably one of the most important characters in all of Gundam.
They they don't really do much with her in this episode.
No, pretty much just establishing a simple fact, and that fact is Amuro's a fucking psychic.
Yeah.
But he's not the best psychic. But he is a very good psychic. So, what happens? Crane flies by, he goes, shit, that's a crane, and is compelled to, like, follow it in view, and so walks around the corner of the house.
He sees a woman.
Yes, a clearly Indian woman with bright green eyes and a yellow dress.
She mostly ignores him. He says something to her in the English one. He's like, hello. And she says something like a non sequitur of something. Like, she said, like, oh, it's a pity or something.
Oh, yeah.
It's something in reference to what's about to happen.
Yes. Yeah.
She predicts this bird is going to...
eat shit.
Have a heart attack?
I thought, like, maybe the bird just got waterlogged and thus crashed.
I guess
it just kind of
it's flying along being all graceful and pretty
until it slows down and just eats shit into the water.
Yeah, just pilots a bombardier straight into the fucking water
with
in slow motion.
Yeah,
with sad music.
Yeah, and
rain.
And it's real shiny too, like a lot of glitter effect. It's a weirdly like shoujo anime thing. Moment with this crane.
If you're listening to this and you're thinking, wow, Fuzzy and Chris have some weird energy, no.
That's what this episode's like. I mean, yes, we do, but also it's because of this.
Yeah, we're doing the best with what we've got.
Yeah.
if you're like listening along and not watching, just go watch the start of this and just look at it.
Like,
just experience this.
I realize that we normally already multiply the amount of time it takes to get through a Gundam episode, but like, proportionally, this is how long this scene takes.
It's so long.
It's really long.
She says, she echoes throughout his brain about something about does anybody mourn beauty or something like that. And then finally, she after the thing dies, she says it out loud.
Yeah.
To which he goes, wow.
Yeah, he says hi again, but he got closer and, like, approached.
Yeah.
And she goes, oh, what? And, like, finally notices him. And then the rain stops, and she goes...
And she's like, oh, yeah.
At which point she runs off the porch, dances around in a circle, and then fucks off stage left as Amuro stands there watching wordlessly. Just, he's got a dumbfounded look on his face of just like, what the fuck did I just watch?
I just realized that this is kind of, Because she's, like, supposed to be the weird, mystic, spooky lady, right?
Yeah.
But the way they present her in this episode, she kind of fits the manic pixie dream girl trope. She's just weird and...
Fuck, you're right.
Yeah, and drives a... And, well, I guess Char's not actually that much older than her.
Yeah, we don't actually know... I don't know how old Lala is. It wasn't explained in this episode, so I don't remember offhand.
But it has that vibe to it. Like, she's just a weirdo that captivates two gentlemen in this episode.
She is 17.
All right, so she's an older lady.
for
Amuro, anyway.
For this show, kind of. A lot of people dying. Very low average age.
Good news is we cut away from these two for a bit.
Thank God we get back to an actually normal Gundam.
Oh, just wait. We'll go back.
Yeah.
But geez. So we cut to Char on the Zanzibar. Where I just want to say, Mulligan's fucking holding it down.
Yeah.
Mulligan's been around for what, like 6-7 episodes?
Yeah. Mulligan, I'm hoping he lives. I don't know.
He's
I don't
taking
remember.
His fucking vitamins or something.
His anti death vitamins. is not getting thrown out the fucking window by Char vitamins. They're gummy. They're shaped like tiny Char helmets.
He's not only the longest running sidekick Char's ever had, but with the amount of episodes we have left, there's no, even if he died this episode, spoiler, he does not, even if he died this episode, he would still be the top reigning Char sidekick.
Yeah, I'm high key hoping that he just makes it to the end. I'm okay with him dying in like the last episode, but if Mulligan lives, it better yet, if we see more of Mulligan, if Mulligan is a returning character in Zeta, I will shit myself.
Mulligan has hit that spot with me where I kind of affectionately think about him when he's on screen, like I do with Job. Except that he's not been as murderous and weird as Job.
I would argue Mulligan is indeed Char's Job. Like that's about the payment we're getting for him, and I'm into it. I like him.
Hold on, I think we missed something here. I just want to make sure. Does Hayato, like...
That's... We're not there yet. We're not there yet.
Okay, that's later. Yes. Good. Because I want to talk about that.
Yes, so...
Okay.
Char and Zanzibar are pulling up to side six, and Mulligan's like, why are we pulling up to side six? And Char's like, I am not going to tell you, but I'm going to heavily imply that Lady Caecilia has asked me to do this.
And I don't want to get stepped on with literal stiletto, like the blade stiletto.
Yeah.
So, we're doing this.
Yeah. But I can't officially tell you that. I can only imply it really heavily.
Yep.
We paraphrase. So, yeah.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Yeah.
Caecilia did it.
Yeah. Also, he he high key is like, both Konskin and Dozel Zabi are fucking idiots who don't plan ahead, so we're ignoring.
Perfect.
Yeah. He says it more politely, as Char is wont to do, but you know what he means.
Speaking of con scum, though.
Yeah, speaking of pond scum, he hears that Char has docked with Side 6.
He legit does have a Hitler stash.
It's a little bit wider than that.
Just a tiny bit. He's like, maybe I can get away with it here.
I'd argue, like, he is the halfway point between a bushier Tom Selleck and Hitler. Like, he's that middle line.
Okay.
Because it extends past the bridge of the nose too far. Or not bridge,
I think you have to go
flare.
Full Tom Selleck or you're just a Hitler.
There is no in-between.
No.
What if you have a small mouth?
Full beard.
Smart.
You have full beard.
No mustache. No mustache for you.
Go Abe Lincoln. Do the opposite. Grow everything in but the Hitler area.
Beards without mustaches look really weird, I'm not gonna lie. So,
do what?
I think beards without mustaches look really weird.
Yeah, no, it's fucking. I am very embarrassedly. I rocked that look for about 3 months.
You
in
should
my early
be embarrassed,
20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it was terrible. I don't suggest it for anybody.
Yeah. So, to other topics. Pond Scum hears about Char docking with Side 6. I'm just gonna call him Pond Scum, by the way, because that's about what he deserves. White Base then proceeds to just sit and watch as the Zanzibar parks next to them. Everyone but Amuro is here, and they are all watching this with the biggest... My read was more like, come on. Here? So, Char pulls in, and Kai, kind of in the back, is like, what if we invite him over, have a cookout? Just do a whole thing together.
And then the world's smallest firebrand.
The world's smallest firebrand, Hayato.
He's just like, fuck that! The people who killed Ryu are right there! I'm gonna go fucking punch him!
I'm gonna kill him! It's like we are in space Switzerland. I'ma kill him.
Yeah. He has murder in his heart. This tiny, tiny little murder ball.
He is
just
4-1 of fire and brimstone.
Just, he's like, I am going to go avenge my big guy. That's what I'm going to do. Who's coming with me?
No one.
Who's coming with me?
Hayato, sit the fuck down. Yes. Says Bright.
Hayato, shut up, you're drunk.
Yeah, you're drunk on anger. And I'm drunk on power, so shut the fuck up, Hayato.
Yeah, fucking Bright, man. Yeah. We'll get there.
This is, when we get to that part, I also have some words for him.
That's what I said. When I messaged you when I watched this episode the first time, I was like, alright, well, I hate this character. Also, fuck Bright.
Yeah, okay.
Bright is on my goddamn shit list.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I agree. So, we cut back to Amuro, who's with his dad, and the dad's like, how'd that upgrade thing work? And Amuro lies.
And
Amuro's
like, what?
Yeah.
He's like, the upgrade I gave you, I know you put it in there because you were doing so good!
So,
okay, Dad.
Amuro lies, kind of brushes it off. Dad's looking not great. I mean, Tem is doing what he was doing, which isn't great.
He's a gadget gremlin.
Yeah.
He's a bit, he may be a goblin or something. dude's lost his gourd. He's like,
he is out of it. Yeah.
He's like he's the Gundam version of the crazy swamp witch.
Kinda, yeah. Except he's not useful. Like, he doesn't do anything good.
Right.
Crazy
he's
Swamp
Witch.
He's
not actually, like,
usually,
bad either.
Yeah. He's just...
He's a bad dad.
He's a very bad dad. And so then something happens that's so fucking jarring that this was the part of the episode that I stopped, was like, am I too high? And went back and rewatched it? No. I'm not. It's just this weird. So, Amuro is visibly appalled by how bad his dad is doing.
Yeah.
The dad goes back over to his drawing board, literally, and then, like, knocks some books off the table, and then just David Lynch possessed Tomino?
There's flashback to last episode where he repeats the he must have brain damage from the
space. And they on the Jap they didn't have that in the Japanese. Wild. In the Japanese the music just suddenly stops.
Oh no.
And we cut to and it like it cuts to Amuro looking at it at towards his dad. He's basically just looking middle distance, though, from the camera.
Yeah.
Looking pensive. And then the music stops. And it was already, like, the sad build-up song, but it, like, stopped mid-beat and was incredibly jarring. And I'm just like, what the fuck? At which point...
Yeah, this is... At this point, in the English dub, they're repeating that his speech from... His inner monologue from the last episode, so that's weird.
Yeah, he doesn't do that at all. It's just complete silence for a second.
Yeah, I think that's worse. I think that's definitely worse.
Until Amuro changes his emotion, like, his face, he contorts his face, rather. I don't want to make it sound like it's a sudden pop. He animates into looking sadder about this and begins crying. At the same time, once the tears start coming to his eyes, blue tint. Hard blue tint.
Yeah.
Over the whole scene. We then show Tem's back. He's clearly passed out. It's not immediately clear if he's passed out or dead. Because Amuro... Like, we cut back to Amuro for a second, looking sad. And then he fucks off. He immediately cuts to the... We cut to the Jeep's wheels spinning and up to Amuro.
He's booking ass.
Yeah, he's just booking it away. He then flashbacks to the last time he saw his dad, and his dad was okay, which was literally episode one, when...
Yeah, where he's like, are Gundams more important than people? And the dad's like, fuck yeah, they are!
Yeah. which, ironically, I just now realized that neat bit of parallel here, literally, Amuro is the more important piece of the Gundam equation, as we are about to find out. Yep. That just now clicked with me. All right, cool. I got it now.
Good. We did it.
Yeah.
Good job, team. Handshakes.
Handshakes all around. Anyway. So, yeah, he fucks off, thinks about that, and then the Jeep hits a pothole and gets stuck in the mud.
Mm-hmm. Aw, nuts. Aw, beans.
Aw, beans.
I guess he's gonna have to walk back.
He's gonna have to... Oh, but look at that. A Jeep in the distance is headed this way.
That's awesome.
That's handy.
Wait, but they're not slowing down. You know what? Let's jump out in front of them and yell stop.
Okay, please stop. Of course, they pass him by and hit a mud puddle, which splashes him.
Mud.
There's a brief second, though, where he looks at the mud puddle, and then he gets splashed.
Yeah.
We then, the Jeep proceeds to stop, and we can clearly see, like, the left side of Lala's face from the driver's side. And then guess who gets out of the passenger seat?
It's a white boot.
Leading up to a long boot.
Long, luscious red leg.
Red leg with a sword at the hip.
Shit, son, it's Char!
It's Char. Now, this would be a good time to note that these two have only met once, and they did not share names. Nor did they know for a fact that one another was the pilot of the Gundam and Char.
Yeah. But Amuro is like, oh, fuck, is that Char?
Amuro immediately notes, is this Char?
Yeah, Char has no idea who Amuro is.
Yes. This is important.
Yes, because obviously Amuro is a better psychic bullshit than Char is.
Yes, actually. And this is like the first time we show that. And congrats, this is a very important character trait that you should remember and keep with you for a while. For like the rest of UC Gundam.
Amuro
recognizes Char. Char doesn't recognize Amuro. The woman, who at this point we didn't know her name was Lala yet. Lala is like, oh, I thought you were gonna dodge that. And he's like, how the fuck would I dodge that?
Sorry, I thought you would move out of the way.
Yeah.
That's not right. I think you're closer. She implies it in a way she's like, I thought you knew that was going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Or, in case you're not catching it, I thought you were as psychic as me, you punk ass.
I was testing you, nerd.
Turns out you just a punk ass. Anyway.
Stuck in the mud ass.
Stuck in the mud ass. But yeah, Amuro is practically shitting himself, and Char is like, what's your name, son?
Amuro Ray. Amuro
Ray.
He has a full name. And also, it just now makes sense to me, like, yeah, they wouldn't know Amuro's name. Like, of course they know Char's name, because Char is like a boogeyman.
Right, but even then... We know that not every Fedi soldier knows what happened with Char as Nabel. It's something we cover in an earlier episode, even. So, like, Umbro can also get away when Char introduces himself of just being like,
uh-huh.
Cool, interesting name, awesome. You got an interesting look with you.
Yep. In fact, who does tell him that's Char?
It happens later. Amuro asks his name.
No. Originally, like, because he's known it's Char for a while. Someone had to have, I guess, someone on the bridge or someone must have said, hey, that's Char. That's a guy.
Yeah.
That's an important guy. It was a billion episodes ago. Fuck it.
Yeah, it's been a long time. But on the other hand, also keep in mind, it seems like in the previous episodes, they were talking to each other multiple times.
Yeah.
Despite the fact that these were not actual conversations being had, no radio, no nothing. That was just them having separate thoughts that apparently happened to be perfect replies for each other. Huh.
Uh-huh. So, Amuro is like, holy shit, how do I know this is Char? I have no idea.
Yeah.
Char has a mystic power of being able to tow him out without us ever seeing him tow him out.
Oh, they tow him out in mine.
Oh, no, they do. I remember. It's when he's unhooking the chain. He just suddenly has the chain unhooked.
Oh, weird.
They do show him pull, yeah, because he has Lala do, like, Lala hit the gas.
Yeah, that's where we learn that.
Yeah.
It's Lala. They pull him out, like, literally, no big thing. They pull him out. At this point that Amuro considers, how did he know it was Char? And you're reminded that they have never actually spoken. There was, like, that one time they were both wearing space suits and they saw each other, so, like...
Yep.
Char asks Amuro his age, and he replies honestly, and then promptly, but politely, jumps in the jeep and fucks off.
I'm outie!
Yeah, like... He does it as politely as he can, but he also is emphasizing speed.
He's going the distance.
Yes, he's going for speed.
He's all alone.
He is, in fact, operating that jeep all alone. And
in his time of need.
Yeah, he could really use a friend.
I'm so sorry for my behavior.
I mean, I was thinking it, and I just decided to keep going with it, yeah. Char.
Yeah, Char's like, what the fuck is up with that?
Yeah.
And she's like, he was fucking rude. Like, at one point earlier, when Amuro was, like, staring blankly at Char, he's like, I know it's weird to see an enemy officer, but you could at least say thank you, dick.
Yeah, he does say that. Which is a very Char thing.
Yeah.
Just like, I know I'm pretty, but come on. Get on with it.
And then Lala's like, oh, he she plays coy. He's probably just heard your name and is scared of you. Stares at camera.
Yeah, like, there's actually, the subtitles even catch it. There's a very distinct pause in the Japanese, too, of, he probably just heard your name, or something. It's, like, that long, and so, yeah you know it's the or something, and you know it's, y'all is psychic, dumbasses. Uh-huh. Commercial. We got back.
Yeah! Oh, shit! Fuck, I was yawning.
It's a shit show. Do we have any... do we have anything?
No, we don't have any new ones, so... You motherfuckers. Would you very much please go check out Cerebros, a podcast where I and my friend Livy... I decided to stop saying best friend because it's insulting to you.
It's
fuzzy
fun.
Earmuffs.
Like,
she's my best friend.
Yeah, no, it's we all. It's okay to have best friends. Like, I reckon best friending is a one way street. In my opinion, like, the consideration of that title, and it's fine if it's not mutual sometimes.
I'm not saying
Livy doesn't actually like you, for the record, but also you're not my best friend. It's fine. We're very good friends.
No, yes, we are. I have lifted you up off the ground in person.
Yes.
We are bonded for life.
That is true. We have done that.
So your sweat is in my Oculus.
Yeah. Okay, now just that phrase makes it sound like my sweat got in your eye. Which is...
It may have. We were drunk the first time we met.
Yeah.
I got drunk.
Yeah, that's true. No, that was.
Anyways, please watch Cerebros.
Watch Cerebros.
An X-Men Evolution rewatch. Like this one, except... Oh, wait, no. I am still the idiot in that one as well. And then
exactly like this one, but British.
But yeah,
and more goth.
Fuzzy is British in that one. And check out Witch Scouts on DriveThruRPG if you are that sort of nerd. Also, Fuzzy has another podcast called Grim Dorks that I hear is terrible and you shouldn't listen.
It's less that and more just this long bitch right here needs to sit down and edit the fucking episodes, but I'm busy and there's stuff.
It's really hard to find motivation to sit, because I don't know how it is for that one, but for this one, it's like, I know it's probably fine. I could probably just lob the ends of it off and put the bumpers on. But what if there's something wrong in the middle?
Yeah, that's basically...
So I have to listen to the whole fucking thing.
Yeah, that's basically exactly what it's like for me. And, like, there are just occasional times where, you know, someone hits a mic or something, or John's keyboard is a little too loud. And, yeah, this is a specific call-out post. It's John's keyboard. Any keyboard knows his noise. Any keyboards you hear on Grimdorks are John, and any clicks are me. That's just how it has always been. That's your hot behind the scenes. Yeah, I just need to sit down and...
You got any other... Oh, I've got just a shout-out. I've listened to a new podcast called Chasing Chocobos, where three brothers, not the McElroys,
still brothers.
The one is named Griffin. Gavin. It's Gavin. Fuck, I fucked it up. It's whatever. He hasn't seen Fifth Element. He's dead to me. So three brothers who are not the McElroys are playing through all Final Fantasy games.
Christ.
At 5 hours at a time, and then doing a recap of them every time.
Christ.
And it's been pretty enjoyable. So go check that out.
I'm just imagining getting through I've been playing Final Fantasy 1 on my phone.
Uh-huh.
That game's...
What's your fucking team? What's your team, boss?
Warrior, Monk, Black, White.
Okay, you're not equipping your monk with any weapons, are you?
No. I have a walkthrough.
Alright.
I want to...
Also, you're a fucking coward. Red mage or nothing. God damn it.
I would rather have the damage out.
Four red mages.
Four red mages. But they're all specialized in a different thing. Yes. Wait.
Red Mage just has a dope hat with a fucking feather in it, guys.
No,
like,
no, you're
on.
Right. I also real high key want to make like a white mage poncho.
Oh yes, that'd be so good.
Yeah.
Anyway. Do you have any other special plugs?
No, not at this stage in my life. No.
So
we come back to White Base's bridge. Yeah. The crew is standing around. Yeah, it's we're getting close. Let me just check the time so I know. And subtracts it. We're fine.
We're better than fine, even.
We're
doing fine, but I'm about to question you.
Okay, so we cut to White Brace's bridge, and they're all standing around the big map thing that exists, I guess. We don't really address the fact that there's a giant floor map in the bridge, and it's underneath the two dudes in the crow's nests. I don't really understand Tem Ray's choices on designing the bridge of White Base, but I think the oxygen deprivation may have been a pre-existing condition. So... No, really, this place is laid out dumb shit, so...
Yeah, but it looks cool.
It does look very visually pleasing, but it makes no tactical or practical sense.
No, especially since we know, A, wrecking in space makes you shake and fall and stuff, and there are no goddamn seatbelts in this thing.
There's not a seatbelt in the whole place.
Just a drought of seatbelts.
Yeah. No one in the future really understands the concept. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
No, wait, that's not true. Everything else has seatbelts. Only White Base. Yeah. Literally the only place we haven't seen seatbelts is White Base's bridge.
Maybe. Okay, hold on. They hadn't got to that yet. They were still building him.
Bam, figured it out.
Yep, they don't. Like, we don't need seatbelts. It's not fucking pilotable right now.
That wasn't
so
at no point did Miranda or her now dead fiance go, maybe I should wrap that one up.
You don't understand. Tiny screws for seatbelt holders are very rare right now. They're all in the gyms.
So they can manufacture a fake super metal and repair the Gundam with the Gundanium.
Yeah.
But they can't.
I mean, look, if you wanna take out the ammo mine and put in a seatbelt mine, that's your thing. But
you don't need new seatbelts every time. Have you ever replaced a seatbelt in your life?
No, I have not.
Exactly. But in
seatbelt's defense, I am not a very handy person.
Have you ever been, like, personally in contact with the very concept of a seatbelt replacement?
No, and I have a car that's older than I am, that has the original seatbelts in it, and they're wonky, and I would never replace them. They're fine.
See? Anyway, so they're basically all debating on what to do when they leave, because they're 90% sure the moment they leave, either the Zanzibar or the fleet the fleet Konskin brought that is waiting just outside Side 6's airspace. One of those is probably gonna take some shots. And so
we just cleaned this thing.
Yeah.
Like, but luckily, our second favorite middle manager shows up.
Yep.
First favorite after this episode.
For the moment, yeah. Cameron comes on the ship, barges in, really. Security's not great on Wipix.
No. Well, you know, all the kids are in the mines, so.
Yeah.
Who's guarding the door?
Well, actually, Kika appears on screen at the start of this scene. She's just holding on to Haro, and Haro is just towing her around, like, the perimeter of the ceiling. And I will not lie, it was very heartwarming to see, and I would totally get a sticker of that. Like, that was real cute.
Like if you're a kid and you're in Zero G and you've got a robot friend, that guess can what? That's not your sled dog.
Yeah, that can also, like, propel itself. I don't know how Haro propels itself.
Tiny farts.
Where does he keep all the farts?
In his butt?
What are the contents of his butt?
Farts. he comes on and he's like, I own a private ship! And I will escort you outside of Side 6's space. They wouldn't fire on you with me there. Aha! Except he's much more nebbish about it than this.
Yes, he is super nebbish about it. But quite boldly states this. Mirai immediately chimes in with, yo,
you're being fucking stupid.
You're being an idiot. You're being you're being selfless because of me.
And this is a performative selflessness.
Yeah, and a few other arguments. They proceed to have a very public argument. Yeah.
Yeah. It is we cut to other people, and it's very much like mom and dad are fighting.
Yeah, it really is. Like
in front of our friends.
Well, what's weird is Mom and her ex are fighting in front of Dad. Yeah. And we're all also watching. Bites finger.
Yeah.
Like it's awkward.
Yeah. So she's like, she's finally getting frustrated with him. She's like, it's too late. You weren't there when I needed you. I don't love you. Like, this isn't going to happen. You're doing this to try to win me back, and it's not going to work.
No, we don't want your help. Which then causes, suddenly, let me get the line out.
Okay.
Suddenly, Slegger runs in from left side of screen, slaps Mirai,
backhands her.
Like Mondo backhand, too. Like, it was clearly inferior, but clearly attempting to be a bright slap. Slaps her and calls her a fool. We then cut through the whole White Base crew being shocked. Finally on Bright's face, also, and he just looks, like, consterned in the start of angry, and Slegger launches into his explanation of he thinks Mirai is being foolish for refusing legitimately good help, and ignoring, and this is my significantly more major sticking point, and I have something to say later, and also that because Cameron is being such a forward dude in this instance, in a romantic sense, that she should at least consider his feelings more than she has.
Yeah, he's like, can't you see this dude's serious?
Yeah.
You should respect him a little more, or something like that.
He keeps using that word, serious.
Yeah.
He then turns to Cameron and says, if you're being serious, be serious, fucko.
Implying that he should have like hit Mirai, I guess.
Also heavily implying that he should do what Slegg just did.
I would like to note
that at this point in the summary that I write, I stopped and said, I know for a fact Chris and I are going to talk a bit about this, and every detail of this, so I'll just skip ahead a little bit. So that's what I did. Fun fact. So let's talk about it.
No, so, okay, yeah. So, what the fuck?
Yeah.
What the fuck? What the... Fuzzy? Fuzzy.
What the fuck?
Fuzzle? What the fuck? So he runs over, backhands our girl.
Not only the
badass helmsman.
Not only a character we like. Like, let's for a moment say we didn't like Mirai. Still a much smaller person and female than the giant
being
Slegger
stalked by her ex.
Yeah,
like that's what is happening.
Yeah,
because she has said, "I'm not interested in you. Please leave me alone." And he does the opposite.
On top of that, assaulting us. Inferior. Officer.
Superior. No, she's the second in command on the bridge, motherfucker.
She's only an ensign.
God damn it.
Yeah.
Okay, fine.
Slegger is one rank down from Bright. He is still the second highest ranking. He's just not the second in command. He is technically her superior officer.
Anyway, striking an
inferior officer, which whatever. Is in and of itself...
I refuse to call her inferior!
Fair. Which is... That's the correct word.
I don't care! Lower ranking!
The lower ranking officer. And... Which is objectively a bad thing, and I know we like to joke about the Bright slap, but there's a reason modern militaries don't let you do that.
Right.
And...
It's bad.
Like, for a moment, I would like to entertain... If you wanted, for some reason, to get away with this, if you cut out all of the dude shit, this would be slightly more okay, because then Slegger would be treating Mirai as an equal to Amuro in terms of respect.
Yeah, if you take the culture of this show.
Yes, if you take the tonal culture at the time, and... did not have the weird, gross dude stuff that's in there.
Yeah, if he didn't immediately turn to her stalker...
Yes.
...and say, you should fucking hit her when she backtalks...
Then maybe. I feel like we would be having a very different conversation right now, focusing on very different elements of this.
I don't know. It's terrible. It's fucking... It was shocking.
It is!
Like, I did not expect that out of this show. Like...
Because
we've talked about, like, how pretty good it is compared to other anime, especially at the time,
right.
With gender issues. And then this happens.
Yeah.
Alright, so here's low-key, like, the second worst part of this, is fucking Bright agrees with Slegger. And is like, yeah, Mirai.
Is that what he says in the English?
Yeah. Yeah, he says, think about this, Mirai. Like, he's grumpy about it. And, like, looks to Cameron and says, if you're still offering, we would like to take your very kind assistance.
He does not say that in Japanese.
Oh, what does he say in Japanese?
In Japanese, he just glosses over the slap and the weird seriousness stuff. And when Slegger turns to Bright, Bright goes... I forget what he says to lead into it, but it wasn't like that. And he does then ask Cameron if it would be okay, if Cameron's still offering. I think he agrees with the perfectly fine help part. But not the other part. Well, at least that's not okay, at so all what it seemed like in the Japanese.
It's definitely worse in the English then.
Okay,
but
weird.
Even that one, not good.
Yes.
Not fucking good, Bright. Slegger just assaulted your second in command.
Yeah.
And, like, this shouldn't matter, but also your fucking love interest.
Yeah. I mean, I recognize that this is, like, my weird upbringing, but for me it matters especially. Like, you dumb son of a bitch, you're supposed to be, like, a noble warrior fucker, and you're being such a cowardly middle manager, you're letting this pass? You're even being a bad middle manager by letting it
this
pass.
This is disgusting on all parts. No one... Mirai, who, like, honestly, like... Okay, so Amuro is out there fucking murdering people all the time. Obviously, we need him. Mirai has probably saved the White Base's ass more times than not.
Yeah.
Just by, like, not fucking crashing every time shit blows up.
She's, like, single-handedly one of the best pilots I think any battleship has ever seen.
And she's a fucking transport pilot.
Yeah. That,
like,
I would never expect to ask a dude who drove a carrier ship, an oil tanker across the Pacific Ocean, hey, can you take this battleship and drift it?
Yeah,
Mirai can!
Yeah. And, like, no, there's no loyalty for her on the bridge. Which I understand, like, okay. I understand, the thing is, if they were going for this, it would be a little less egregious. Because I do understand, like, when shit like that happens, it's shocking to everybody.
Yes.
And you can't, like, say, you should have done this, this, and this. Because you're not there, things are weird. But that's not, I'm not giving them that much credit.
Right. On top of that, like, on one hand, I could answer this, like, kind of tonally again, because it is, recall, the second highest ranking person on the ship doing something that the highest ranking officer on the ship has historically done to other, uppity, for lack of a better word, in lower ranking soldiers. He's done that before, so there's precedent. Also, Slegger's fucking huge. Like, and on top of that, we've seen generals in the show also trying to dictate Mirai's love life.
Yeah,
which forgiven. I really want to make that clear. I am only contextualizing.
Maybe I do have a bit of a double standard here. But also, you can't take out the context of fucking male violence against women.
Yes, absolutely. It's still super bad and unforgivable.
It's so gross, and I didn't expect it.
Right?
Like, I knew Slegger was gross, but I thought he was like, you know, your drunk cousin gross, not your fucking abusive uncle gross.
Speaking of the drunk abusive uncle grossness, he's also animated a little bit weirder in this one. Like,
his face is all fucked up.
Yeah, he's got a significantly more wrinkly, gross dude face throughout this episode, which is pretty contrary to the significantly cleaner, slim-jawed guy we've been seeing.
Yeah.
I would contend, then, that this is very purposefully trying to make Slegger look bad, but that makes me wonder what purpose will it serve the narrative, if any, because there's probably better narrative tools.
Yeah, and like, this is a lower key. If it's that, if even if that is the case, like, we're trying
establish
to
Slegger's not a great
establish
dude.
Something for Slegger. Like, it's still, like, a lower-key version of fucking fridging a woman for a man's pain, right?
Yes.
Like, his character development doesn't have to rely on beating Mirai.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyways, the whole situation's fucked and I hate everybody. Cameron gets the least amount of shit just for being kind of a fucking coward.
Honestly, it's his
But he is also still stalking his ex.
In the most defense I will give him, it is also literally his job to be around White Base and the Zanzibar right now. And I don't... I'll be honest, I'm not sure where you're quite getting stalking. I haven't gotten that read on it, but it might just be because I'm not getting the read.
It's Mirai's reaction to it.
Yeah, I guess.
She's very much like, hey, I asked you not to come here. Yeah. I asked you to stay away. You're not staying away. We're done. You need to accept that we're done. Because he does say, like, I can be here for you, or whatever. Like, he's obviously...
Yeah.
It's an old trope of, like, last-ditch effort trying to win back the love of your life, right? Like, that's a thing. But, dude, I just...
Yeah, no, it's still a super gross scene. I really hate it.
I think if it was just that, I probably wouldn't be laying on the stalker thing so hard.
Yes.
If it was just him showing up and being like, hey, please. But I'm just so tired. Like, look around our fucking world right now, and anytime, like, a woman comes forward and says, like, hey, a man has hurt me or harmed me in any way, or if I have a male stalker or something like that, like, I'm scared for my life from this man, other men will be like, oh, you're overreacting, or you're being too emotional, or we don't believe you or something. Like, it's hard to...
Meanwhile, if a dude not did that, they'd immediately be like, oh shit, what's happening? Why are you so scared of that person? It's super fucked, and I'm not sure why this scene exists. And it's detrimental.
So here's how you handle this. And still introduce, like, some weirdness with Mirai and Bright, which is like, Bright orders her to stop talking.
Yeah.
And accepts the offer on her behalf, which is still gross but understandable because he's like, fuck off, we've got to protect everybody on this ship.
Yeah.
It's not about you and your, like, I understand this sucks, or maybe I don't care that it sucks. Like, who knows, if we're trying to paint them as being a little more shitty. You don't have to have them hit Mirai.
You could have done that having Slegger, because I remind everyone for the fourth time, Slegger's the second highest ranking officer here. He can do that!
Yeah. But the whole thing is, this is fucking gross.
Yes.
I don't like this scene.
Yeah.
Slegger can eat my whole entire ass.
Yes.
And when he's done, Bright can have the leftovers.
Yeah. Yeah. Bright will hopefully... Yeah, that's the other fucking part, honestly. Just the fact he stands by... The part that I got mad about is that he just stood by. Because... Yeah. It's weird, and I would almost argue tonally inconsistent for him to stand by. Because earlier, when someone got too emotional, he would absolutely deck them.
Yep.
Kai twice, Amuro once. I think he gave Ryu one, too.
Well, here's my thing. He didn't say anything yet.
Right.
He ordered Amuro to do something. Amuro refused.
Yeah.
He's ordered Kai to do shit. Kai kept being a piece of shit.
Oh, I meant hitting Slegger.
Oh,
I meant my read on Bright up to this point, Bright would have punched Slegger. And that's what I would have written.
Yeah.
Which, admittedly, also borders on the fridging again.
Yeah.
But just the character, like, that seemed... I feel like if Bright saw this interloper, who has been disrespectful to him, do that to anyone, really...
I'm so angry, Fuzzy.
I'm also very frustrated at this scene, and it's very strange, and I want it to have a payoff, and it, I don't see a way to
not having happened.
Yeah, I don't understand how it could have one. It's not a good scene.
Unless like everybody just apologizes to Mariah, and Mariah gets to fucking kick that dude in the nerds.
In the like, nerds.
He wholeheartedly apologizes and learns his goddamn lesson, and Mariah decides to forgive him. Then we can talk about this. But until that happens, they're both fucking dead to me.
I give Slager like 2 episodes at most. That's my honest guess. I don't remember.
I just hope.
Anyway.
He's already dead to me. So, fine.
So that was
Walking Dead Man.
That was us getting very angry at a cartoon that came out in 1979.
Literally before I was born.
Literally
almost
before
decade.
Either of us were born. Before we were motes in our daddy's eye.
This show was like almost a teen by the time you were born.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
It
was a teen.
It was a teen.
Yeah.
It was going through its angsty hormonal phase when you were
born. It could drive when I was born. Actually,
anyway.
Yeah, it could.
Fucking,
it could have.
I'm exhausted now. Can we make this two-parter and I can go take a nap?
No, you can make it. Only got a little bit more, I promise.
Yeah, fine.
We cut back
to White Man.
Yes.
Wait.
Well,
we didn't cut away.
We didn't cut away.
We cut out.
Yeah. You
we
and
cut away
I,
from this emotional turmoil.
Yes, yeah. You and I cut back to Whitebase. We, as a concept, cut back to Whitebase after that.
Hey, all Tominos out there. Mm-hmm. A few simple rules. Don't hit anybody. Unless they're Nazis. You can hit Nazis.
There's a few other
Nazi
you
adjacent.
Can hit too.
You know, yeah. You understand. You get the idea.
Yeah.
There's a threshold,
yeah.
And then it's whatever. Don't hit non-Nazis and Nazi-adjacent types. Don't hit women. Support your friends.
Unless they have challenged you to a fight. Like a fair fight. Go ahead.
Like if you're going to put on boxing gloves and go to town, fine, whatever. I, you're an adult. You're a consenting adult. You can do that and then have sex. I don't care.
Yeah.
If as long as you're consenting to it. But whatever.
Fighting should be like fucking. For two consenting adults or, you know, two people over the age of 13 within 2 years of each other in the state of Texas. Consent laws are weird in Texas. I don't know if you know that.
Yeah, it's strange.
It's really weird.
I agree with the old adage of if you're worried about the consent laws in your state, you should probably not do what you're thinking of doing.
Yeah.
Anyway.
It's like a much better... Yeah. Really, just go by the half plus seven. Half plus seven. Or is it half plus five?
Well, no, because I don't give a fuck. Yeah, like, if a 20-year-old wants to fuck a 50-year-old, I don't care. Like,
whatever, that's true. Anyway, Jesus... That was a
weird
tangent.
We're getting real uppity here.
Yeah, that was a weird tangent. Why were we even there?
So, don't hit!
Don't.
Unless they're Nazis.
Yes. Or you've been challenged
and then
to a duel.
Hit responsibly. Or if you've been... Look, if you're challenged to a duel, you fucking, you know, turn your sword around and go to town, you know. It's all bets. You take the gloves off. Or put them on. I don't know. Let's do this goddamn episode.
Do we?
Slager, you are fucking everything up.
Yes. So, we emotionally cut back to Whitebase. Doing that earlier plan Cameron proposed. They pull out, Cameron's driving in front. Konskin, of course, is watching because he's been jonesing for this.
Yeah.
And is like, hey, did we launch the Rickdoms? And his second is like, yeah, we launched the Rickdoms. And then we cut out to space where a bunch of Rickdoms are just floating,
just
powered
floating
off.
Right by the bridge.
Yeah. Because I guess...
Scares the shit out of Kika? Kika.
Does it?
The little girl. Yeah.
No, I didn't catch her noticing it.
She screams and runs away.
Wild. But fair.
It was a very emotional moment. I watched this episode twice because I watched it before and I had to watch it before we...
Later, when they actually get there. No, I just meant, like, them floating in space dormant. Like, when the Rickdoms are first... when the gun is hung up over my fireplace here of the Rickdoms, they're just floating and off. And, like, they even have released their bazookas, so they're just, like, static in space. It's real weird.
They're doing a float.
Yeah. So, fuckload of these guys just waiting. And, yeah.
Sorry, I just noticed that you noticed the thing that I noticed.
Cool. Yeah. So, which it also immediately does. I don't know why we bothered having them dormant, because it's like 30 seconds later and Konskin's like, fuck the treaty! Go! And he launches the Rickdoms. He really wants to kill Whitebase. He has the Rickdoms basically just surround Whitebase.
Menace it.
And menace, yeah. Mean mug it. Amuro enters the locker room, and is like, hey, did something happen on the bridge to Slegger? Slegger says it's none of your business because you're a tiny baby bitch boy.
Yeah, he says it's adult thing.
Yeah.
Don't mind, it's none of your business.
Yeah, which is just even more like, Slegger, go fuck yourself.
I feel like since neither of us have noticed this before, it may not have existed before now. But Slegger has a custom
helmet,
jumpsuit.
Yeah.
So he has a blue jumpsuit.
Well, he's always had the blue jumpsuit.
Okay. His helmet has an S on the side, but not like just an S, like a fucking cool guy S. I don't know how to explain it.
I would almost call it like, you know, the Star Fox 64 S?
Yes.
It's that S, but angular instead of foxtails.
Yeah, curves because it's on a circle. Yeah.
Also, I didn't realize till I was speaking the words that the swishy bits on the S's on the Star Fox logo are foxtails. I didn't really.
He's a fox.
Yeah. I get it. I understand. I was just previously an idiot. Still am, but used to be too. This bit brought to you by. Fuck, what's his name? Mitch Hedberg.
Oh God.
Sometimes I worry I'm gonna tip into a Mitch Hedberg path and just be too stoned all the time. And that's why I take tea breaks, honestly.
We'll have an intervention if you get to Mitch Hedberg level.
Thank you. I am also growing out my hair, so I now just doubled down on this being a worry. So.
Just don't wear sunglasses. Anyways.
I wear sunglasses all the time. So we.
God damn it, Fuzzy Nook!
I wear headbands, though. That's kind of.
Okay, well, there you go.
Yeah. We cut to the bridge, and Mirai is like, oh shit! Because there's a fucking Rickdom in her face right now. Yeah.
Pointing its mono eye at them.
Yeah. Just mean mugging it. Mirai and Bright tell Cameron to please fuck off now so we can war. Mirai gives him one more. I just want to be really clear on this, boy. I don't like you that way, but I do appreciate you risking your life here. Points, please. I guess. Please exit stage left so I
You're going to get murdered.
You're super gonna die. And he does.
Also, yeah.
No, he also leaves, not dies.
Yeah. The guy piloting his is apparently like a hired hand, and he's like, oh, buddy, you did not pay me enough for this.
You did not pay me for having a giant purple mobile suit fondling my ball sack, Mr. Cameron, sir. I was not expecting the cool touch of Xeonanium on my grundle today.
I really like the pilot guy, because he's just like, I'm 2 days from retirement.
Yeah.
What, dude? What, dude? Why are we? Come on, can we? This ain't go. We can go. Let's go. Can we go? Let's go.
It's funny too because Cameron's about to reply, and the pilot's just like, "I'm leaving."
Yeah. Bye.
And they do. What's also funny is I was watching this. Like the window was kind of small, so. They wave to it. Mirai and Cameron wave to each other as they leave, but due to the compression, it looked like Mirai just flips Cameron off as he leaves.
So great. Yeah,
it's really fucking funny.
So I don't know how much of a angsty teenage weirdo you were, but he Caleb does a very angsty. Sorry,
I am going to share something with you I haven't shared with anyone since high school. In sixth grade, I almost exclusively wore Billabong and Marc Ecko shirts with skulls on them.
Perfect.
And a hoodie to match.
Perfect. So Cameron, like, begs the pilot, like, can you please fly past the bridge so I can silently wave?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where they do their silent waving.
Yeah. So I don't know about you, but I definitely did that shit as a teenager where I was just like, I'm going to stand here and look sad next to where this girl I like is going to walk.
I never did anything that bad, but I did do worse, I promise.
Okay, good.
Remembered a really specific one I'd like to share because I'm looking back and it's really dumb.
Teens are the worst.
I bought her a little box of chocolates, this girl I liked, and we all had like coat hooks and shit, so I tried balancing it on top of hers and I couldn't, so I just impaled it. I just fucking impaled it on the
other
fucking.
This is what I want to do to you.
Why?
Enjoy your fucking chocolates.
Yeah, have these fucking strawberry filled chocolates. Oh, Max. Please like me. Please, Emma, please.
Please, I'm so awkward. I'm just
such an idiot.
Please give me attention. No one else will.
I am very dumb.
Ah, that's beautiful. I've definitely done things like that. Being a teenager is a rough gig.
Yeah, it really is. I wrote some stupid fucking notes, too. I've just been brought back to that time in my life, and I want to die.
Yeah, we need to eject on this before we get sad again.
I'm not going to get sad. I'm mostly just going to want to, like, collapse into a singularity and then vanish.
Never exist.
Never having existed in the first place. Just... anyway.
So, war happens. Amuro launches...
Pretty much the moment they cross the boundary, it's wartime.
Yeah.
And wartime it is. Amuro launches, and they start fighting. Amuro actually, like, fucks off, and we don't see him for, like, a hot 5 beat.
He's fucking waiting in the goddamn weeds like a fucking alligator.
Yeah, he really is. The turrets start firing, the skirts are really tearing in with bazookas. Cameron is watching this from far away, and he starts crying, and he's like, war.
It's stressful. He's a pacifist, and his ex is on that ship.
Yeah.
Just a quick, before we continue, because the fight's about to start in earnest,
mm-hmm.
The music note for this one. So this is, I can see how they might think this is fight music. It, to me, it feels like a 70s dance competition music.
I would argue that Amuro's styling in the next scene, or during this scene, is similar to some late disco, but yeah, I don't remember this music at all, and I don't know why.
Because it's very similar to, like, I wouldn't be surprised if this is the normal fight, like, non-tense fight music.
Right.
But it's kind of bright and happy, and I can just imagine people, like, with numbers on their backs dancing, trying to win, like the end of Grease.
All right. That's, an interesting pull.
The end of Grease where they're having the dance competition, not the end of Grease where they fly off in a car.
I figured you meant the dance competition part, not the part where they fly off in a car. I realize
that wasn't the 70s. Whatever, go fuck yourself.
Why did they fly off in a car? So, I don't think there's ever been an answer for that question, and I know.
They both died of alcohol poisoning from the party, and that was the last moments of their existence.
Consciousness. Wild.
So,
they, Cameron's crying. They pass by a TV station. Apparently a TV station, like, camera satellite, is just watching this from afar. Which gives us the narrative device to then also cut over to both Tem and Char and Lala, as we're about to see. First, though, Amuro comes back. I really want to make it really exceedingly clear. Amuro's a psychic death machine.
Yeah.
And he...
Psychic death machine is also my prog rock band.
Nice. Not only is he a psychic death... I hope my quiet nice came through the mic for you.
It did.
Good.
It did. So, I was very smug.
So, he immediately mercs two dudes, barely... one shot apiece.
Yeah. Blip, blip.
Yeah. What's funny is... Later... I'll wait for a second. On that one, because something funny happens during this fight. So, we cut over to Slegger, and Kai is about to start shooting at the Rickdoms, and Slegger is like, no, these are for capital ships. Also, we're not supposed to shoot these towards Side 6, remember? And he's like, ah, shit.
Yeah. One missile, and we're all fucked.
Yeah. He also...
Still don't know why.
Amuro also... Slegger also heavily implies to just let Amuro do his job, and by do his job we mean merc dudes mercilessly, because we cut back to Amuro literally killing two more dudes.
Yeah, and we cut to like the one of the pilots being like, is he fucking predicting what we're doing?
And then another one is like, no, it's just dumb luck, and then that guy dies.
Yeah.
And then that guy is immediately murdered.
They also like, let's do our special tactics. Spoiler alert, their special tactic is to drift left and right off screen.
Yeah.
And
in a very weird scene, too, because their special tactics start drifting around, but Amuro is learning to be psychic, and so he's actually seeing triple, because he's seeing their moves in real time. Yeah. He's seeing the future moves they're gonna make in real time.
This is like a even earlier, like he's catching what they're gonna do even earlier. Because I think it's last episode, he caught whether that guy was going to go high or low before he even started.
Yep.
So it wasn't like the second he started calling, he was like, he's going low.
Now it's actual precognition. Yeah. Yeah.
Now he doesn't even have to wait for them to start moving before he knows what they're going to do.
And boy, does he make a fucking use of that. He just keeps... He one-pumps dudes until his gun runs out of ammo.
Just real quick, let's pause. Do y'all remember back when Amuro...
was constantly firing and missing and running out of ammo?
Yeah, would just unload ammo on one fucking dude and not hit him?
Yeah.
That Amuro's dead.
Yeah.
This Amuro has killed him.
Because he filled him with a beam rifle's worth of shots at a million miles away with perfect aim.
I feel like we're starting to sound like a broken record with regards to how ridiculous Amuro is.
What's going to be really funny is, from my understanding, once we get to, like, Zeta and really every series thereafter, we have to... We're experiencing, like, the whole Shonen arc in one season, and then we're gonna have to go back to the start again, right? Of tiny bitch, punk-ass fuck, getting in robot, and then they turn into Super Saiyan God, Super Saiyan, Ultra Instinct, Kai. No, not Kai.
But not Kai.
Kai I meant King Kai, Kaioken.
We're doing a...
Amuro Ken. What if Kai knew the Kaioken? So okay, but what if Kai knew the Kaioken?
But what if Kai knew the Kaioken? He has a vaguely no, he's a little too rounded to be a Trunks haircut. If he like just stopped styling his hair or styled his hair a little more, he would have a Trunks haircut.
I think
get the length.
I think his head's too long to ever pull off the Trunks head cut. You need, first of all, a more square head, and second of all, a widow's peak so extreme you could skateboard off of it.
Peak.
Yeah.
That dude has an extra forehead just for his widow's peak.
He does. Vegeta has 80 billion years worth of forehead. You can start going. It takes like 3 seconds to get from his eyebrows to his hairline.
And it's not a receding hairline.
No.
That's just where it is.
Yeah.
Anyways, back in this world.
Where was I? Oh, yeah.
Slinger's like waiting for good shots.
Yeah, he's waiting.
Since he doesn't have psychic powers.
Yeah, so he has to actually wait like a punk.
And also, these enemies aren't, you know, a woman who is distracted by arguing with someone.
Yeah.
So he can't just run up and hit them.
Yeah.
So he doesn't know what to fucking do. Slinger, I hope you die.
Be real. You know he will.
I can't wait.
You know.
I can't wait.
So, Char... Cut.
Here's my favorite thing. This whole time, this pacifist nation are gleefully broadcasting this war.
Yes, on...
to everybody.
On TV, yeah. I assume again, it's because this time it's happening, like, right outside the gate, so to speak.
I guess.
Because, like, normally they're millions of miles away, but right now it's literally, like, just out of their airspace.
Also, you might correct me. I may be misinterpreting that they are pacifists. They may just be neutral.
I think they're just neutral.
Okay. Because Cameron's a pacifist.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, assumed everyone is, which is rude of me. Anyways, yeah, so we cut back and Char and Lala are watching this shit on TV.
Yeah, just watching it on TV.
Just having a nice relaxing...
Char...
not date...
I think he just went to... We don't know why Char picked Lala up. Or in an earlier part, Char also asks... Oh, actually, no, it's right here. I lied. Char's like, how did some guy treat you? And she was like, he was all right. And then Char's like, you should pay attention to this TV program here, because I tell you, real war is not glamorous like them TV dramas. And she's like, I know. And they keep watching.
The impression I'm getting is Char and Lala are either having like a low key romance situation, or Char is like protecting her.
That's the read I'm getting so far.
Yeah,
that, and
that's where I'm leaning.
Now that said, that changes. But now that I'm trying to remember, like. I'm not kidding when I'm telling you Lala is one of the most fucking... She is only in this series. She is one of the most fucking important characters in the show. Like, she is referred to in Double Zeta, and Double Zeta doesn't have any white base crew in it. Or Char.
Yeah.
And of course she's, you know, mentioned in Char's counterattack, because, yeah, duh, Char's in it. It's his counterattack.
Char's counterattack. So, frickin', but he's basically just watch this, and she's like, okay, sure,
yeah.
Boss, whatever.
Yeah, and right now I think there is mostly a protect-y thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then meanwhile, Amuro just keeps murdering dudes as he keeps learning his powers. And even Bright, we cut to Bright, and he's like, Amuro's really keen today. Like, he is...
What's happening?
Yeah, it's funny because everyone watching this who can see that it is Amuro, because not everyone... The TV camera can't, but Tem is also watching this.
Yeah.
And is like, ha, I'm a genius, because I'm a... touch my computer so the screen turned off. I'm a genius because of that piece of garbage I put together.
Yeah, he is like up at his fucking TV, just like, yeah. Like a raving fucking madman. Yeah. So
White Base proceeds to take out an enemy ship. Konskin freaks the fuck out and orders ramming.
Like, whoa, this is not going as well as I thought it would go.
Yeah, and he orders ramming speed. Also, apparently, we only see one Musai get blowed the fuck up. It's implied that the whole rest of the fleet of Musais dies in this fight. They damn, say that later with words, but they don't show it.
We don't see it. Off screen.
Yeah.
Maybe it's just like, you get it. You get the idea. They're going to mop the floor with these people. But here's the thing I want to point out. Amro's psychic powers manifest as a HUD for him.
Yeah, which I... Honestly, like, that brings up a really interesting concept. Like, wouldn't... If you had psychic powers, wouldn't they, like... Wouldn't you start rationalizing it into a way that makes sense for you? So, like, it might manifest into a HUD, because that's what makes sense that for would your be brain. Cool.
I think in this instance, they're doing it for our benefit.
Very much.
And that's not what Amuro's seeing, but I
much like
really like that idea. Yeah, now that you've mentioned it.
Honestly, I do think Amuro would see it as a HUD, because that's what he's... The psychic powers manifested because of his war, and so him being in the Gundam... Honestly, I wouldn't be surprised if... Forevermore, his version of psychicness is always linked into a Gundam's HUD.
Yeah.
In part because later he is very much linked into a Gundam's HUD.
Amuro fucking charges, and we cut back to Lala, who's like, the Gundam's gonna win. And Char's
like, you can't even see
it. How do you know? Yeah, you can't even see the Gundam. It's not even on the screen right now. And she's just like...
And she's just like, bitch,
in
watch.
English, she says something like... Yeah. In English, she says something like... she alludes to the fact, like, don't act like you don't know what I'm about, or something like that.
What a weird thing to say. I mean, okay.
No, like...
I get it.
She alludes to the fact, like, that he knows... She alludes to him knowing that she's psychic.
Right, yeah, okay.
And that he shouldn't doubt her. I just don't remember the exact
words.
Yeah,
okay. She does...
I really wish she was like, bitch, you don't know me!
Yeah, she says something similar in the Japanese, too, actually, of like...
Yeah.
Like, I mean, you brought me on. I believe she says, you brought me on for my keenness, didn't you?
That's
the word they kept using, or at least that the subtitles kept using. I don't know Japanese well enough to know for sure.
So real talk, the first time I learned the word keen, it was playing a Baldur's Gate action game on the PlayStation 2.
I know exactly the one magic, you're talking about.
magic weapons. I was a hormonal teen, so I played the bussy lady and jumped around a fountain.
Yes,
a lot.
She has but, huge yabos and a dominatrix outfit. We all are weak.
I'm not proud. I've gotten better.
I'm not...
I still really like boobs, but I understand.
I'm not going to lie to you. Today, a woman with really high Daisy Dukes walked into the Walmart, and I almost slowed down my car. Like, I have not improved.
I've gotten a little better. I at least feel bad about it.
Yeah, I do immediately go, like, man, I hope no one saw that.
Yeah, mine's like, oh, I hope I didn't make them up.
I know, she didn't.
Yeah,
really good Daisy Dukes. They're also white, Daisy which is Dukes why I noticed because my brain was like,
right,
bright thing. Oh,
yeah. Anyways, the first kind of magic thing you could get was a keen weapon, which all it did was increase the crit threshold of your weapon, I think. That was the context I learned keen in. So when anytime someone started using the word keen in fiction or stuff, I'm like, they played Baldur's Gate. You know, dumb 13-year-old. Anyways, back to this one and her keenness.
Man, I think I still have a page threshold. Of cheat codes in Mercenaries Playground of Destruction's game disc, like, thing. Anyway, love that game. So, speaking of this weird HUD thing, we should probably actually get into what happens. Amuro uses the psychic vision to spot two weak points in... Konskin's capital ship and proceeds to and I'm really not kidding here, do some Fist of the North Star bullshit. Because he sees these two spots on the ship, takes a sword to each, and just stabs it and leaves the sword in, and then, like, boosts away.
He does this a lot with his sword.
Yeah, I noticed that. I mean, he also just yeeted the beam rifle into space. They're not getting that back.
Yeah! After he ran it, I don't know if that was this episode or last episode, but he finally ran out of ammo in his gun again.
Yeah, and then he just fucking, it.
Like, fuck this thing.
Yeah, that thing got yoked into Mars, probably.
I just love the difference of, like, oh no, I'm out of ammo! Ah! And this is like, I'm out of ammo, this gun is dead to me. The ship explodes. Lala's like,
Char is like,
yeah.
She even, like, stands and, like, dances and twirls, and Char's just like, yeah, damn.
Turns out, Tim is like, I am a mad scientist!
Yeah.
Bow before me in my greatness!
Tim 100% thinks it was the garbage's fault that Amuro did so well. Which brings us to that realization I had earlier of the Gundam really is just a tool for Amuro. Amuro is the piece.
Amuro is the not garbage piece.
For a long time, it was the Gundam. It's not the Gundam anymore.
Yeah. I like to imagine, like, he goes outside, Tim goes outside and finds where Amuro smashed that fucking thing a little while later. Is like, the fuck?
What the fuck?
What the fuck is this? How did this get here?
Yeah. But that garbage yard also teleported to the woods, so that's still on a city street.
I have no fucking... Oh, Fuzzy, where the fuck does he live?
Twin Peaks. The only
thing I can think of. I've been thinking about this all day. All recording. So here's my idea.
Maybe
Amuro and them took a side six shuttle from White Base to that town for shore leave last episode, and the ship continued to a dry dock elsewhere. And what we were seeing, they just didn't show us him getting to that town. They showed us going from the dry dock to that town, but never either end of it. That's the only thing. Or they fucking teleported. Site 6 is a fucking mystery island to fuck.
I mean, it is also all artificial, so maybe it did move? I don't fucking know.
Maybe it slides around like those fucking little puzzle slidey thingies when you're a kid they give you to keep you fucking occupied.
That's a really cool mental image. Can you imagine going into one of these big hollow cylinder colonies and just seeing chunks, like, lift up into the lower grav parts and rotate around and slot into other parts because, like, this arm needed the power plant today and they needed a fucking paper factory or whatever? Or they all alternate on paper factories because those things smell like shit.
Why is it paper factory?
I don't know, but that's what came to mind. And also, I don't know why paper factories smell like shit. I just know all of that part of East Texas smells like shit because of a paper factory.
Oh, yeah. It's real good. Speaking of smelling like shit paper factories, Cameron sits down and cries.
Yes. Like a paper factory.
Which... Yeah, like they do. Mirai has a bit of a protagonist moment where she stares out the window.
Amuro joins the party and stares backwards at side six.
He combines these two, and looks at the window and cries to a sad tune.
Yeah.
Amuro, I fucking really feel bad for Amuro, like, he just wants his dad to give a fuck, one fuck. Yeah.
Amuro really has, like, a lot of problems, the poor lad. He really, really needs help for a lot of things.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
It's literally not.
Next episode!
What a weird David Lynch episode.
I don't like this episode.
I don't either. so much plot shit happens, but it's presented in such a weird fucking way.
Yeah, it's presented weird. They add shit in there that's not good, that doesn't help. It just distracts from everything else. It's paced very weird. They can't decide on a fucking tone. Like you said, they get the magic person of color trope in there.
Yeah, it's kind of all over the place.
I think I like Lala.
I mean, yeah, we don't know much about her right now. She's just kind of magic. Jazz fingers, rather, to emphasize magic. I want everyone to know that.
I like that she's kind of a little shit with Char.
Yeah.
Like, I like that. Because most people around Char are like,
oh, it's Char. I'm so...
Or they're like, Char is a piece of shit and we gotta keep him from murdering us all in our sleep.
Right, yeah, there's no real middle ground. And it's not really clear... Well, actually, no, I just now realized all the dudes who think Char would kill him in their sleep are dudes who would kill Char in his sleep.
Oh yeah, definitely. They're the upper class. Yeah. That was supposed to be like Dozel or whoever. That's the Zabi family are like, keep an eye on that fucker. We need him, but watch that.
Even Konskin is like on that end of it. Yeah, he would totally shank Char in his sleep.
Definitely.
Let me tell you,
fucking
there's a reason all of those types of characters keep hating on Char.
The real hero of this episode,
is
fucking Mulligan. He's still there. He made it another
episode. He really did. I think the low amount of screen time is helping him.
Yeah.
We get him in small doses.
He's not an attention hog, is the deal.
That's how he gets by.
He's not a greasy wheel.
He lets the bolder personalities be like, I'm gonna fuck him up, and then they die, and he just gets to sit back and be like, yeah, that guy was kind of an idiot, wasn't he, Char?
We're going way over time, so in summation, Mulligan's great.
Yeah.
Slager is dead to me.
Bright's on thin fucking ice.
Thin ice. The thinnest of goddamn... It's cracking beneath your goddamn feet, you mental manager piece of shit. I'm gonna change my goddamn Twitter...
We've built an entire mythos.
I'm playing a character, and just there's a mythos. I'm gonna cut all this out, because I don't want to keep the mystery.
Anyways.
Thin goddamn ice.
Thin ice.
Amuro sad?
Amuro's really sad, and fucking... Man, I do want a little bit more Hayato. Like, that little outburst. I want more of that.
Yeah.
Give me more of my 5'5" firebrand.
Murder some goddamn Nancy.
Yeah. He is down. So... He will bring Degwin Zabi's monster Dong on a pike across the land.
Yep.
That which, as we all know, Degwin Zabi's Monster Dong is also Ao Bawakua. next time, Space Fortress Solomon fight. Yes, finally, that thing we've been hinting at the last like 5 episodes. That's happening. It's real war this time. It's gonna be a pretty battle-heavy episode, but with a little bit of that Zabi politics because Dozel's the star.
Zabitics.
I forget if it's the meme time or not. Dozel is also the dumb one, so I don't know how many episodes he has left, honestly. It's been a while since I've seen the series. Look. Next time!
We know it's less than 10.
Yeah, I know it's less than 10 episodes from now! I know that much. Next time on Mobile Suit Fan... Man, I just now thought about it. There's a lot of... Let me tell you. Zabi family... They don't look great at the end of this.
Oh.
Yeah, they do not look...
You space Nazis don't look great, huh?
Well, they are laying waste.
Oh, gotcha.
It is wholesale.
Real quick, before you say your ending thing, I want to say that I've done Mobile Suit Fandom stuff so much that when I go to type in my search bar to find episodes of Mobile Suit Gundam, I have typed Mobile Suit Fandom today, and felt real dumb. Anyway, go ahead.
Next time on Mobile Suit Fandom, The Glory of Solomon. It's the same in Japanese. Will you be able to survive? Amuro. Well, I hope you enjoyed episode 34 of Mobile Suit Fandom. If you want to yell about how either of us are garbage, or that you like what we do, you can find us on Twitter with @MobileSuitPod, and our personal Twitters from there. You can also email us at MobileSuitFandom@gmail.com. Also, if you're new to Gundam as a whole, and really want to give it a try, check out the official Gundam YouTube channel, Gundam Info. They have the entirety of Mobile Suit, well, not Mobile Suit Gundam, but Gundam Build Divers, as well as Gundam Build Fighters, available English subbed completely for free. Which, if you really just want to see giant robots fighting, it's some good shit. They also have a few of the movies available for free, so you can check them out there too. Until next time, mech fans, remember, strap in, because everything regarding Lala is exactly like this. It's just trippy and weird.